The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I'm very proud to carry that banner to Oros and Oberon.
I am of Ireland. Come dance with me in Ireland.
Let us address the next 7 years with hope and courage as we work together to build a future for our country.
Yes, Patrick Egan is back with me, presenter of Talking History and director of the Trinity Long Room Hope, continuing his series on Irish presidents and the office of the president in this country. And we have been talking about it for the last few weeks. All previous editions available as podcasts, standalone episodes, they're up there on the News Talk app. We are talking about sex scandals this week. Is that right?
We are. And we're actually talking about the biggest sex scandal in Irish presidential history.
We don't really do sex scandals in this country. To the same frequency, they're fond of them across the pond.
No, and this one, I suppose, is a sex scandal in inverted commas because it was more of a media sensation than perhaps a real scandal. But it occurred 2 days after Pope John Paul II left Ireland in 1979. And it was a huge story in Ireland. And Brian Farrell in RTE had a special programme prepared in case the president was about to announce that he had resigned.
So how did it begin? So it's 1979. Paddy Hillary is president.
Patrick Hillary is president. And I suppose it all goes back to tensions in Fianna Fáil. Charles Haughey was vying for the leadership. Jack Lynch was the Taoiseach. He himself was to go pretty much forced out in 2 months' time. And I think that really provides the context for it because Patrick Hillary, he's seen as one of the more dull presidents. He's seen as the person who helped create that image of the presidency being a retirement home for politicians. And I think part of the problem is he never had a mandate of his own. He was elected unopposed in 1976. He was re-elected unopposed in 1983. And what it actually meant was that between 1973 and 1990, the people didn't vote on election after they voted for Erskine Childers, because when he died, Cruaile Dádaigh was appointed without an election. And then when he resigned, no one wanted to challenge the proposed successor, and that was Patrick Hillary. So I think that was one of the problems. And then the sex scandal, the rumours that Patrick Hillary, the president, who was a very distinguished former minister, he was Ireland's first commissioner to the EEC, he was a hugely respected person, married to Maeve, and they seem to have had a devoted and loving marriage. But yet, the capitals of Europe were rife with rumours that he had a number of mistresses.
Oh.
He had a mistress who was French. He had a mistress who was Italian. That one of the mistresses was living in Oros an Uachtaráin with him. And this all came to a head during the Pope's visit, that all of these European journalists speculating about, was the president about to resign?
So where did it begin, like the rumours? Did they begin in foreign capitals?
Well, there's a lot of debate and controversy about that. So one of the theories at the time was that the KGB, operating out of the Russian embassy in Dublin, had started the rumours as a way of damaging the Pope's visit to Ireland and causing a controversy. I think that's highly unlikely. What the Hillary family always believed themselves was that Charles Haughey was behind it.
Okay.
Charles Haughey had started these rumours as a way of destabilising the president, perhaps forcing his resignation, and then that would destabilise Jack Lynch and force him.
Oh, sorry. So Jack Lynch is, the theory, the thinking is, Jack Lynch is Taoiseach. Haughey says, if I can force out Hillary, the whole political house of cards in Ireland kind of falls down and I can be swept to power.
And that's exactly it. And John Walsh, a very distinguished academic in Trinity, in his official biography of Hillary, he discussed those theories. When that book came out, PJ Mara, the late PJ Mara, he denied this and said that, you know, Charles Haughey had much bigger things to be worrying about than starting these rumours. But however they started, they seemed to have gone rampant across Europe. Now, no one in Ireland knew about them.
Okay.
Because the Irish media weren't reporting it. The journalists knew that these things were being talked about, but no newspaper was covering it. No radio station was covering it. RTÉ News wasn't covering it on the television. So that should have been it, except when the Pope left on the 1st of October, the rumours just seemed to go into overdrive. President Hillary talked to the Taoiseach Jack Lynch. Jack Lynch said that some kind of response or denial was necessary. So Patrick Hillary, 2 days later, on the 3rd of October, he brought in the editors of the main newspapers. So Timpat Coogan, who was the editor of the Irish Press, Douglas Gageby, the editor of the Irish Times, the editor of the Irish Independent was brought in, the head of RTÉ News. They were all brought in.
And they all knew about these rumours, but no one had printed anything to do with them.
No one had printed anything. And so... Patrick Hillary denied that there was any affair, denied that his mistress was living in the Oris, and certainly denied that he was going to resign. And he asked the editors to pass this on to their journalists. But of course, this is the late 1970s. It's a few years after Watergate, and editors were very keen to be seen to be following correct journalistic practices. And they just told him that they couldn't do that, that he would have to bring in the journalists themselves. And so he organised a press conference for that evening at 7:30 p.m.
And if the Timpat Coogans of this world knew about it, and you'd imagine they would, because you've all, as you said, the foreign media are here for the Pope's visit. They're asking questions about it. Did Joe and Josephine Bloggs know about it? Was it being talked about around the country?
No. No,
so nobody kind of around Ireland was aware of this.
Nobody was aware
rumor
of it.
That the president was seeking to deny.
Nobody was aware of it. No one was likely to be aware of it because no Irish newspaper would have touched it.
So say nothing.
That probably would have been the best strategy. And instead, he brings the journalists all in for this press conference. And Sean Dignan was the political correspondent for RTÉ Television. And he asked that question. He said, "Why are you denying something that no one is asking you to deny, that
yes.
no one is aware of?" And Patrick Hillary, in fairness to him, he explained that he thought the presidency was being dragged into this because there were all these rumours that he was going to resign. He thought it was damaging the office of the presidency. So he kind of explained the rationale for creating this media story. But as I say, RTÉ were expecting him to resign at any moment. At that point then, the phone rings because his wife Maeve had gone off on a holiday that had already been planned, that she was going to go off to Spain after the Pope left. And the phone rings and the President is told in the middle of this press conference, "Your wife is on the phone."
Oh,
so he
dear
walks
gosh.
Out to take this phone
call.
This is
like Father Ted or something. Go on.
And it was because he hadn't been able to get through to her to tell her that he was going to do this press conference. So he goes off to tell her that he's doing this press conference. She seems to be completely in agreement. She gave him a message, "Pass on my love to the journalists." But anyway, that created even more tension and suspense. So he came back in and seemed to have answered all her questions. Sean Dignan ran off to for the 9 o'clock news. Apparently, Patrick Hillary may have said after Sean Dignan left, "Oh, and my official denial is off the record." But by that stage, it was way too late because Sean Dignan already left. So the 9 o'clock cover broke a news story that there was no affair. The president wasn't resigning. And that was the first the public heard that there was even any hint of a scandal or a president resigning.
It's mad. It is mad. What about political? So it didn't work, obviously, if it was Charlie's plan to force him out of office. Like, what was the public and political reaction to it?
Now, all of the newspapers came out very strongly behind the president.
Yeah.
And there was a brilliant editorial in the Irish Times where Douglas Gageby wrote about how public life is hell. There was huge public support saying that he was right to scotch these rumours. But I think probably most people thought, why, like the media advice, you know, yeah. why are you drawing attention to something that no one is talking about? Because the first thing, if you go and deny, if I was to send an email around to people saying, "Just want to deny that I'm having an affair," yeah. immediately everyone would think,
"Well, we have a word, it's the Streisand effect," isn't
yes.
that what they call it now?
Yeah.
They wouldn't have called it that at the time, but that's what it is.
And part of the problem is that he didn't have really any press officers, and that was one of the weaknesses of the presidency, that he really was. But the chairman of the Labour Party at the time was one Michael D. Higgins, and Michael D. Higgins came out strong in favour of President Hillary, said that he deserved privacy. He attacked this petty invasion of his private world and was very strong about how people shouldn't be delving into things that are none of their business.
So he survives it and he continues in office.
He survived and continued in office and was re-elected unopposed in 1983. I think he reluctantly carried on. I don't think he enjoyed being president. There were huge tensions with Charles Haughey, who became a litre of Fianna Fáil and Taoiseach soon afterwards. We already talked before about the time in the Oras when the phone calls were made, and it was alleged at that time that Charles Haughey is Charles Haughey then at that point leader of the opposition wanting to stop Gareth Fitzgerald dissolving the Dáil, that Haughey called and threatened the captain, the aide-de-camp, who was the military officer on duty. If he didn't bring this message to the president, he was going to ruin his career. And certainly Patrick Hillary thought that was a genuine threat. And in a very courageous and honourable way, he contacted the superior and he said, I want to guarantee that that officer's career will not be hurt.
So if we accept, and most people do, that in 1990, we had the beginning of kind of the modern presidencies. You know, Mary Robinson reinvented the role or reshaped it, certainly to a degree, for a new age. It by implication, then, Patrick Hillary is the last of the old style presidents.
He's the last.
You know, how different was his last 7 years compared to Mary Robinson's 7 years?
Very different. And by the time he was leaving office, you know, all the jokes were about how he was spending all his time improving his golf handicap and that he wasn't really doing anything. He had no real funding to do anything, and he tried, but, you know, it took him a long time to get any kind of real budget. The wages of his staff in the Oras were tiny, and he was hugely embarrassed about that, and he campaigned to get them increased. But he used some of his presidential allowance to pay the staff extra money, and he actually used some of his own presidential salary to help out the staff in the Oras.
Okay.
He had no press officers, so it meant that if he did do a very good visit, like for example one time he visited anti-drugs groups in the inner city of Dublin and he met with them and he talked to them, but there was no publicity because no one told the press it was happening and it got no attention. There were times when he was invited to events like the wedding of Charles and Diana, and he wanted to go, but Charles Haughey, back as Taoiseach, blocked it, refused to allow him to go. He wanted to do an event with veterans of the First World War in remembrance of that, and it kind of agreed to go, and then Haughey blocked that, so it looked like then the president was snubbing it. Mm. And a lot of the times the organisers didn't really understand that it wasn't the president who was refusing to go, it was actually the Taoiseach blocking it. And so that made him look like he was not very engaged with things. But he himself, I think, wanted to be low-key and uncontroversial. And so even when Gareth Fitzgerald returned as Taoiseach, Hillary was reluctant to stretch the role too much. I think he thought there'd been too much controversy with one president having to resign, with all of the tensions with various Taoiseach, and I think he decided that it was better if the president was, you know, not really seen and not really heard.
The one of the things that all of the candidates now running in the looming election will talk about is representing Ireland on the world stage, which again was probably something that started with Mary Robinson as a more outward looking thing. Did Hillary ever talk about that, representing the Irish people around the world?
Not really. I think what you really see that is when Mary Robinson was inaugurated, she talked about putting a light in the window of the Oras, and this would be for our exiles and emigrants. And from the very beginning, she embarked on this new approach, and some tensions with Charles Haughey, some tensions with Albert Reynolds, who succeeded as Taoiseach, about certain things that she could do. And we might look at some of those next week. But it's interesting. Mary Robinson gave a speech to the joint houses of the Dáil na Seanad of the Oireachtas in 1995, and it was about the diaspora. And it's funny, we're very familiar with the term the diaspora, and it's something we always talk about, and we're all very familiar with it and what it means. But Mary Robinson really helped popularise that word. And I looked back on the Irish Times database from 1859, and the term diaspora has been used over 4,000 times since 1859, but it was only used 350 times or so up until 1995, when Mary Robinson gave that speech.
Okay.
And it's been used, you know, almost 4,000 times since then. And it really helped, you know, create that concept of an Irish people who are in other countries, and that we're not just talking about ourselves here, we're talking about, and it's, I think, a better term than migrant or emigrant. It was the diaspora.
Well, we're going to get into all of that next week, as you say, in more detail, the kind of the role presidents have played representing Ireland on the world stage. So that is this time next week, next Thursday at 6 o'clock, and all previous editions of our conversations, as I say, available as podcast. Patrick Egan, presenter of Talking History here on News Talk. Patrick, thank you very much. We will be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.